Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at the Mall in Columbia with my co-host, Dennis Lane. On today's show, Dennis and I will talk about the impact that the election might have on Howard County. We'll talk about turkeys, Twinkies, and mosques. And joining us today is Dr. Renee Foose, the superintendent of schools for Howard County. She will share with us how things are going in what is now almost her first 6 months on the job. We will get her take on the school board election, redistricting, and chat with her about other school system news making recent headlines. But first, a word from our sponsor. We'll be right back.
Come join Columbia Association on Tuesday, November 27th at the Hawthorne Center in Hickory Ridge for an Aquatics Master Plan public meeting. The meeting will discuss potential changes to CA's aquatics facilities and programming to best meet future needs. The two feasibility studies to be discussed are on replacing Splashdown when it is no longer viable to operate and adding more indoor pool space, possibly on the site of a current outdoor pool. The evening will include a presentation, discussion, and explanatory displays. These will focus on specific options and alternatives for both projects, based on feedback from the public and from members of CA's steering committee. Public feedback is welcome via comment cards and in person with consultants and CA staff. For more information, please visit columbiaassociation.org/aquaticsmasterplan.
All right, Dennis, what do you have to get us started on the local news front today?
Well, you know, Paul, it's not a local news story, but anybody who has listened to it and kind of knows me knows that I've got this thing going on with Twinkies.
Whoa. You like Twinkies or you have a thing going on with Twinkies?
Well,
it's a difference.
The history actually starts back in college when I shared a house with three other guys. We had a shared shopping budget every week, you know, where we'd all chip in a certain amount of money. And the only standing order besides bread, milk, and eggs was Twinkies. You had to buy it. Back then, they came in 12-packs. And
now, were they individually wrapped?
They were individually wrapped.
See, I liked crimpets, which were the jelly on the inside. They came in two to a pack. And my mom was so conscious about sugar intake, she would open up the pack.
Oh, no.
And only give me one
she
for lunch.
She violated the crimpet pack?
I'm still
pack?
Scarred.
You remember that all those years.
The head of the Horizon Foundation, who we recently had on as a guest, she'd be proud.
Well, so Twinkie, so the Twinkie story goes on with me because my dear sister Pat lives in St. Augustine, Florida now. She listens to our show. Every year on my birthday, she sends me a box of Twinkies with candles. And as you know, one year I don't eat Twinkies like I used to, but it turns out our producer's wife is a big Twinkie fan. And so I've given her some of my overflow Twinkies over the years. But the news is that they're going to stop making Twinkies. Twinkie Company declared bankruptcy today. I mean, not just bankruptcy, liquidation. The Twinkies are going away.
But you okay?
I'm dealing with it. You know, we're moving on. It's it's a new world now.
To all my listeners, we're going to be taking collections for therapy for Dennis.
It's a healthier world we live in, and Twinkies are kind of a thing of the past. Although, as somebody in NPR pointed out today, so you might want to move those factories to Colorado or Washington, where they've recently passed the marijuana initiatives, because Twinkies can become very popular out there. Anyway,
Twinkies to turkeys.
Speaking of food.
This is our Thanksgiving Eve show.
Yeah.
And I thought this would be a good opportunity just to kind of point out a local success story that we have when it comes to turkeys, which is the Maple Lawn Turkey Farm.
Yeah. The Iagers?
Iager family. You can take a crack at pronouncing that.
Have you ever had one of their turkeys?
I have.
They're awesome.
They are.
They're awesome.
You know, they do 20,000 turkeys a year.
I didn't realize that.
Didn't either.
It's a little unsettling, though, if you take the kids there because you walk by.
It smells.
Well, all the turkeys in the pen, they're still alive. You know?
And you come back a week later,
yeah,
they're gone.
They're gone.
You know what that was really cute about the story, though, and I think it's neat having that kind of a facility right here in Howard County. But this family, Ellsworth and Mary Iger, they started this turkey operation back in 1938 after they received a turkey as a wedding gift.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, because they've always raised dairy cows and beef cows, I think, on their property. So.
You know, you'd have to tell me. I wasn't around back in 1938.
No, but I mean, I know. But until the farm became the community of Maple Lawn.
Right.
They were big on cows out there. I mean, I'm not a farmer, obviously. I don't know the proper terminology. But so turkeys happened as a result. I
thought that was kind of a neat little story.
That is a neat little story. Another story. I mean, a lot of people are going to be. We talked about at lunch. Although you are staying here, hosting Thanksgiving at your house for the big crew.
I am.
Producer Dave is having his whole family over at his house, big crew. I'm one of those people going to be traveling, and they are expecting more Marylanders to be on the road this week. And it was funny. I was reading that they actually think that traffic's going to start Saturday. People are going to start being on the move Saturday.
Right? Well, with the schools only having two half days next week. Probably getting people an early start,
and that's it. You know, we're flying out Wednesday, right?
We got to come back and talk about that. Well, what's up with that?
You get a whole
day worth of school, but you come in for two half days,
and nobody's focused.
Of course they
are. I guess it's a picture of the economy's getting better, too, because they say that in 2008, just 37.8 million people traveled versus a projected total of 43.6 million people traveling this year. So, yeah. A lot of people on the move. Hope everybody's careful. Has a good Thanksgiving. This would be a good thing to listen to with the family. Tune into and then there's that while you're
traveling.
Yeah,
in the car.
While you're traveling, yes. Okay. Other news. I got this right. We're going to...
The election.
The election and the fiscal... Well, you know, we talked about lunch. Do we talk about the election or do we talk about the fiscal cliff?
It's really the impact that I think the results of the election on a federal level might have on Howard County and this region.
Yeah, because this is a local show. And that's really the bigger issue of now the election's over, we have this fiscal cliff hanging over us. Or we're hanging over fiscal cliff? What's the proper terminology there? That if we don't get a budget deal between the House of Representatives and the Senate and the President, we're going to have these, first of all, tax increases almost across the board because the Bush tax cuts will expire.
Right.
And that affects everybody. But defense takes a big hit.
Well, defense takes a big hit. We're talking about capital gains issues. We're talking about federal estate tax issues. So they're widespread impact.
But for me, I focus on the defense because that in Howard County, I think that would affect us a lot more than a lot of people realize. It's not just the defense contractors that you know that are going to be scrambling. People laid off. You got landlords losing tenants. It just trickles down throughout our economy because a lot of our economy, especially in the past 10 years, has been centered around the growth at Fort Meade. And, you know, cutbacks in defense could have a disproportionate impact here in Howard County.
Well, housing prices may turn around, go back down. We may end up with a larger inventory again. It impacts everyone. It impacts all the merchants here at the mall. It impacts restaurants in the area. It has a big impact.
Yeah. So all we can hope... is that they're going to work it out. I mean, I think they're meeting again. I think there's a meeting today in Washington. But, of course, the president's on his way to Burma or something. So I guess he's hoping they'll work it out.
It's a busy day down in D.C. We've got some hearings as well on the whole Benghazi matter.
That's right.
That's really beyond Howard County's... Yeah.
But what everybody's talking about, though, is Paula Broadwell and and General Petraeus. But, yeah, that's another story.
Sex scandal in the military. What more could you want, right?
Yeah, but bring it back. You got some zoning things going on.
We do. We actually have a lot of land use and zoning type things to chat about. So there's a new proposed zone that has been proposed actually by the Department of Planning and Zoning, and it's called the Community Enhancement Floating District.
Yeah, this seems like a little bit of an offshoot of the town center stuff where they had the community enhancement.
Well, you know, it's interesting because most zones are pretty restrictive and they define with clarity what you can and can't do. This one seems to just sort of be out there for the Department of Planning and Zoning's decision-making authority once it hits their desk.
But I think it helps. I don't know. I don't understand it. And I think we both, after reading it, I don't feel comfortable enough to really delve into it.
Well, it has no regulations concerning density. No height requirements.
Right. They're like trade-off. If you do something for the community, you can get more density. You can get different height. I mean, but it's all a trade-off.
Right? It's customizable.
But I like the fact that there's something, that they're holding on incentive here. Do something for the area where you'd be developing. And maybe a new park. Maybe, I don't know.
School?
A school.
A school, right? Yes. Yeah, right. Thank you.
Something that supports the schools, whether it's fields or, you know, something.
Because what it's saying is one size doesn't fit all when it comes to zoning. We should be able to adjust to local conditions.
And I just need to say, Joan Lankos is one of our groupies, and she has a tendency to come to our shows.
And she loves land use issues.
She's dying to be mic'd up right now.
Yeah, if she had a mic right now, I'm surprised you're not grabbing mine.
I wish you could all
mine.
See it.
Yeah.
And so now this zone, proposed zone, has actually already passed the planning board unanimously and is going to the county council, I think, November 19th.
And its very flexibility has some community activists a little up in arms because they're afraid it's too loosey-goosey. But, you know, but that's the whole idea, I think. I still need to kind of look into this some more.
Well, look, you know my opinion. I mean, I think we as a community tend to include people's perspectives too much.
Yeah.
I think listening, and I think that's great, but we have a representative form of government, and I think we need to rely on our elected officials and department heads to do their jobs.
Right.
And we've elected these people, and I think if they think this is the right thing to do, we need to trust them. And if it's wrong, then boot them out of office.
We got another...
we can start in D.C.
Another zoning... Had to get that in there.
Zing.
We had another zoning thing come up. You know, we have the, and a lot of people don't realize, but we have a farmland preservation programs where a farmer or a large property owner in Howard County can sell the development rights to their property in exchange for money, but, you know, an agreement to not develop their house or to subdivide their property for housing. But a lot of people don't realize there's two programs. There's a state program and there's a county program. Well, the Mullinexes, who have been farmers in the county since, you know, I guess before there was Howard County, maybe, they are now, they sold the development rights into the state program, and now they want out, which is a real interesting kind of situation. They feel that the state requirements are too restrictive, and it doesn't allow them to do things like, I guess they wanted to lease part of their property to a landscaping company that they weren't part of, and they thought that was fine, and the state said, no, if you own it, you can do that, but you can't do it if you're, you know, if you're not an owner, and they're finding it's just too restrictive. Well, part of me says they should have thought about that before they got in the program.
Well, that's kind of how I feel. You know what? They had an option. They made an informed decision to put their land in ag preserve, and they elected to do that. And unless the regulations have dramatically changed, and I don't know whether they have or have not, but unless they've dramatically changed, you know what? That was the basis of their bargain at the time. They got something in exchange for it, and they maybe couldn't anticipate the amount of money they could have made in the private sector with development.
Right. But the scary part is if they are able to get out, I mean, the precedent that this possibly sets is could be devastating.
Right. And then the last story we have is actually a big story that's been making the news. As many listeners know, Woodmont Academy shut down last year.
Catholic school
year.
Right, yeah.
Yep, Catholic school. And has been on the market.
Was that Woodbine?
If it's Woodbine or not.
Old Frederick Road near Cooksville or something like that?
It's near 70, in that area. And it is now under contract with it's called the Dar es Salaam Muslim Community, and they're considering a move from their College Park facility,
right,
which they have outgrown, over to the former Woodmont school.
It's about a 60-acre campus, I think, right?
Well, and they have about 800 families that are part of this community, and they want to relocate their pre-K through 12th grade school and community center over here, and then eventually expand it and actually build a mosque as well.
Right.
A lot of concern amongst the homeowners associations and residents of that area. Concern that it's just too big.
Well, I think some of the initial plans is they were calling for some 7-story buildings with underground parking. I think they've since scaled back some of that initial plans, and it may make it more palatable to the community. But, you know, I pointed out on my blog, you know, this Woodmont Academy land is less than a mile from an interchange of Interstate 70. I mean, it's not like people are going to be traveling forever on rural country roads. You're close to pretty good access, so I don't know.
You know, as unfortunate as it is, I think we still have racism in our community.
You think?
And, you know, it's interesting. I wonder how much of this, and I do legitimately believe that this is too big. The original plan was too big for this campus.
I think most people would agree.
And I think it absolutely is that. With that said, I'm wondering how many people are jumping on the bandwagon, not because they're concerned about the size, but because they're concerned about who.
I'm sure there's some of that. I think we'd be naive to think there wasn't. But
we'll get there one day.
We'll get there one day. And, you know, well, there is one other zoning story that I want to cover, and that's the county is working on some new development rights to get the county in line with state regulations about septic areas. Again, it's a story I'm not sure where I fall on this. The county is considering creating new... there's like they got to create four tiers of development areas in Howard County, with the fourth tier being the most restrictive, where they're saying that if a farmer had a property of 20 acres or more, they could develop it into at least four acre lots for housing. Under this new restrictive zoning, I think
Dramatically diminish their ability to subdivide it, and really cuts into their land values.
It dramatically diminish the capacity. Here it is. Under the current, they could develop 23 acres on 100 acres, or 23 homes on 100 acres. But under the proposal from the county council, only four houses could be built on 100 acre property. So that's got a lot of people up in arms. Some of the longtime Howard County people, like Martha Clark, who's been a farmer in this community forever. She's co-owner of a 320 acre farm and former head of the Howard County Farm Bureau. She said, "This is the most convoluted confiscation of property rights I've seen in my entire life."
Add to it the reversal of putting land in ag preserve, and you got a good old fashioned Howard County mess on your hands.
Yeah, you do. But anyway, in other news, Ken Allman was in Ellicott City the other day making an announcement about the new app. There's an app for parking in Ellicott City now.
I think this is so cool.
It is very cool. Actually, I've downloaded it already.
Have you?
Yeah, it's kind of cool. You know, this is all part of the new parking program they got down there, and they have this app you can download onto your iPad or your smartphone.
And see where the spots are available.
See where the spots are.
Yeah. I mean, I like at the airport where you pull in, and they've got the red lights and the green lights, and you can see down the aisle where they're available. But this takes it to another whole level.
Has that always worked for you, though? They'll say, there's three spaces down the aisle. You go, yeah, where are they?
It works. You just need to get your glasses checked.
Well, red means there's spaces available, right?
See? It's not just your glasses.
I guess.
Wow, we had to collect money for an optometrist, therapy, and now...
Yeah, the therapy could be pretty expensive. But, you know, there's a lot of people upset about this. The good news is it won't be... They're not going to start charging for the space until January 1st. So shopping in Ellicott City over the holidays... I don't know whether they're going to put the free metered parking on for the holidays. They did that last year.
I don't know.
But, you know, this new system, it'll give people a chance to try it out. It's working now, though. The great thing, even though you don't have to pay for the parking, it'll still show you what
space... where the spots are.
Yeah, you'll know where the spots are.
So we've talked a number of times about traffic cameras and speed cameras and how even though school gets out by 4 o'clock, how you can still get snagged at 8 o'clock at night with one of those nice little white vans that
sits by the school zones. Yeah.
School zones. Not sure that's protecting little kids, but that's okay. So there have been a lot of people that have tried to be innovative and come up with technologies that will prevent these cameras from working.
Yes.
You can spray your license plate with some sort of an anti-reflective...
I'm told that doesn't
reflective
work.
...reflective stuff. So, and all of these things tend to be illegal.
Yes.
And they've
yes.
been outlawed both in across the country and in Maryland as well.
Now, our new superintendent used to be a Maryland State Trooper.
Yes, but I have to tell you, these cameras, I have to budget my personal finances around them.
Well, then let me tell you, I got one for you. So the latest is a gentleman that came up with this product, and it's actually expensive. It's about an $80,000 investment to develop it, and he thinks he's going to be coming to the market with this product in the spring at about $350 a piece. So I'm thinking that's about 8 tickets, something like that. So if you need to budget, this might be a good investment for you.
So a vehicle owner could spend $350.
$350. And it's called a no-photo device, and it looks like a regular license plate frame, but it features two little tiny flashes on each side. And when the camera, when the license plate frame detects a camera flash, it creates enough light around the license plate to distort the picture taken by the camera, and it basically shows up as a flash of light on the license plate.
This guy had to have graduated from Howard County.
He was in the STEM program.
So look for that on the market. And what a great segue to introducing our superintendent.
Yes, welcome, Dr. Foose.
Thank you.
Dr. Renee Foose is our guest today. Dr. Foose is now head for 6 months. Is now head of a system with 50,000 students, 8,000 employees, a budget of over $700 million, and 82 facilities.
Mm-hmm.
You're like one of the biggest CEOs in Howard County.
I'm just a teacher on special assignment.
Oh, I love that.
Teacher on special assignment.
I love that.
Is that the first time you use that line right here?
It is.
You know what? I'm reading your background. I mean, you're a Towson grad.
Right.
Towson University.
Mm-hmm.
And Loyola MBA.
Right.
And I guess University of Delaware for your doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But you're local.
Yes.
You are a local girl.
Well, I was born and raised in Pennsylvania. I came here to go to Towson.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
So Steelers or Ravens?
No. Well, back in the day, it was the Eagles. But since I've been here, it is all out Ravens.
All right.
Don't even bring the S word up to me.
Good. I'm glad we got that taken.
That's a given.
So, how's it going?
It's going good.
You loving your job?
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of fun. Interesting.
Everything you expected it to be?
Well, you know, no. We could use, you know, we could develop a few apps ourselves, you know, to solve things like redistricting and, you know, is there an app for that yet?
There's no way to make people happy in redistricting.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
Now, you've been in education for a while. You've been in other redistricting, in other school districts. So it's always the same, isn't it?
Well, no. No.
We're special.
Yes. This is a little bit different.
In what ways?
Well, you know, this just seems to be part of how we do business here. And you've built so many schools so quickly in such a short amount of time that I don't think there was ever any time to stop and slow down and say, hey, how can we do this thoughtfully, you know, looking forward, way ahead? I think it was just you responding to the density and, you know, problem solving as you went. You did a great job. You did a great job. But now folks are upset.
But is it the speed with which we had to develop schools?
Yes.
Or is it the clientele? Is it the residents of Howard County?
Well, I think first it was the speed at which you had to develop schools. Okay. And because it's Howard County, people want to live here. And they want to live right next to that great school that's right there. Because, you know, we do have great schools.
We do.
And to say that, okay, so now we're going to move 25% of these kids to another school because we have a school over here just on the other side of this school that we're moving that is overcrowded or that we're developing, you know, it's disruptive. And it's, you know, you bought your house here for that. And there is no given that where you buy your house, you get your children to go to school. But we could be a little more thoughtful in our process. And that was the approach that I was looking at coming into this. This was well underway when I got here.
Yeah. Staff had already drawn up a plan.
They had quite a few plans that they were working through an advisory committee with. And they presented me with a plan. And it bothered me. It really bothered me. It bothered me because I'm looking at, it was Veterans Elementary School that is what resonated with me.
And that's one of the newer schools. It's already overcrowded.
It's very overcrowded, yes. Great school. Good staff. And they're doing what they can do. They're bursting at the seams. And it just bothered me that we were...
Isn't that one of the first two-story elementary schools in Howard County?
I don't have that answer. I don't have that history down yet, but I will next time. But anyway...
It's so important.
I don't know. I'm a real estate guy, you know.
I know we don't have Twinkies on the menu.
Yeah, no. Okay. That's good. Child obesity and all that stuff. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
So, you know, with veterans, we were going to move out, you know, 300 kids to another school, and we're going to move 200 new students in the front door, you know, so 300 out the back.
How does that make sense?
Well, you know, having been a teacher, having been a principal, I was like, wait a minute, you're changing the school. And that's when I started looking more closely at this and saying, this isn't typical redistricting. This isn't just opening a school. This is a massive shuffle of students, you know, counterclockwise.
Is part of that, are they trying to balance these schools with diversity, too? Is that part of it? Or?
No, not necessarily. It's we have a policy, and there's variables in the policy that we have to look at, considerations that we have to take into account. And you know, our school planners do a great job, and they're trying to take into account everything. And it's just kind of the way we've been doing it. And so I just ask them, you know, one thing. Does this have to be this disruptive? Take a look at this, and let's find a way. And they came back, and they said, you know, there are 1,000 fewer students that we don't necessarily have to move. Still meets the goals of, you know, opening our new school, taking care of the overcapacity at our bursting school veterans, and, you know, really looking at this more thoughtfully. And so that's when the fun began.
Right.
And, you know, in a way, it was fun. I'm not being sarcastic.
Now, but what was the real pushback? I mean, relocating less students seems so logical. Who really fought this and why? I mean, what was really the basis for it?
Well, I think the ground rule, the common ground here we have to understand is that there would be a fight no matter what.
Okay? Sure.
So
yeah.
No
yeah,
one
that's
wants
a given.
To be. Yes,
that's
that
a
is a given. So whether it was the way that, you know, it came out as, you know, the advisory committee felt that their plan was the final plan, their advisory. So they were going to advise me, and they advised me, and I took most of their plan into consideration. I asked for fewer students being moved. So it kind of created a sense of, you know, this plan versus this plan. And then we had support for one versus another rather than everybody coming out saying why we shouldn't have any support for a particular plan. And from there, it just kind of took on, you know, the next iteration of redistricting. And we, you know, everybody started tweaking around the margins to try and, you know, lessen the impact using different variables. And, you know, and ultimately we came up with, you know, the the board came up with a plan that meets the needs of the policy and addresses, you know, many of the other variables that were of concern to them.
Good. And you did what you think was right, and you got the hopefully the fewest number of people upset about it, hopefully.
Hard to say.
It's hard to say. I think, yeah. But I will give you kudos, though, because since you've been on the since you've been superintendent, the board has voted in favor of your, I mean, not the board, but Alan Dyer has voted in favor of your policies twice now, right?
And that's huge. That's two more than the prior 4 years.
Well, I don't think, he must like you.
Alan's cool.
All right, there's a quote. And one of the other things, and that leads me to the other thing, because that was his other issue, was this race to the top funds. And this we're going back another board meeting.
Sure.
A little brouhaha with the teachers union. Mm-hmm. Paul Lemley, who's actually, we've had Paul on the show. What went on there?
That board meeting?
No, not with the board meeting, but with the teachers union and this grant. I mean, they've got to buy in, correct, in order for the...
They had to sign on to the grant, yes.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
And there had to be a memorandum of understanding, apparently, between the teachers union and you on behalf of the school system.
We crafted one, but you know, that you know, maybe fell short of where we ultimately needed to be for them to sign. So we have a couple years ago, State of Maryland applied for and received Race to the Top funds.
Right.
State got $250 million.
And that's a federal program.
Federal program, okay. 22 jurisdictions signed on to that. And a component of that is an evaluation piece for teachers and principals. And it was, you know, they call it the teacher effectiveness model. You get to develop your own evaluation system, by and large, but they have to be within criteria.
When you say you within the school
within system. Within the school system,
yeah.
Yes. And so we work collaboratively with our association to do that over the course of 2 years. And through a series of leadership changes at the State Department of Education, you know, Dr. Grasmick retiring, Dr. Sadusky coming in, as an interim, and then Sadusky leaving, and Dr. Lowry coming in, through that transition, there were some messages that were, you know, miscommunicated out to the local school systems throughout the state. And the big one, the sticking point is, they initially said that the teacher-principal evaluation model would count for 10% student growth. 10% of the Maryland school assessment would count toward the teacher's evaluation. But the federal grant was written for 20%. So that was the miscommunication,
okay.
10% versus 20%. So we're in a pilot year now. The Teachers Association is pretty adamant. You said it was 10%. You communicated to us. We build our model around 10%. It needs to be 10%. You know, and I agree with that. I mean, that's what you said.
Right,
that's
right.
What it should be.
That was the deal.
So we submitted our plan with 10%. And, you know, the state's going to, you know, tell us, no,
right,
do
right,
it again.
Right.
But, you know, in good faith, I thought, you know what, this was what was agreed upon. This is what's communicated.
That's what we need to try.
Right.
So here it is.
It's like you sell your development rights to the state. You got to stick to the agreement.
That's it. Okay. And so that's where we are with that. But in addition to that, and you're talking about, the deficit that we're ordered now to, you know, get rid of at the federal level. And some of the title funds, Title II, Title I, Title II, those funds are being sequestered.
They'll be part of the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's huge funding for school systems. And so What the speculation is that the president's going to take those funds, those title funds that we receive now, and kind of put them into the Race to the Top district grants.
Wow.
So they announced a series of district grants, Race to the Top district grants, that are separate from the federal state program, okay, that the state adopted onto. These would be for districts. You write a grant. And so we wrote a grant for $30 million. And, the union is, you know...
So this sounds like it was a defensive move. In case you lose these other Title I and II grants that you now have at least applied for something to make that up, is that...
Would
that be a correct analysis?
We're anticipating in the future that the district grants will probably be to capture funds that the government is sequestering.
Okay.
But this grant was to focus on 20 of our schools that are most impacted, you know, 40% aggregate free and reduced meals or, you know,
right,
poverty, indicator
right
of poverty, and to do some real out-of-the-box teaching using multiple, you know, different approaches than we're currently using, moving kids more into a digital age. But the union's issue, and I can't fault them for how they feel. This is how they feel. You know, they're upset about the race to the top initially and the teacher effectiveness model and how that all panned out in the end. And
right.
They're of the opinion that this new additional money, the district grant money, would, you know, force us to have to continue compliance to a model that will be expiring in 2014. I don't agree, but I can respect their opinion.
Well, and Lemley, after the meeting that took place before, said that Race to the Top, quote, kills innovation and creativity in kids and teachers. And that, to me, was pretty salient on this issue because they really just don't like being put in that box.
Well,
and they feel like this would put them in a box.
Yeah, and again, that's Paul's opinion, and, you know,
right.
That's where he's coming from. But this grant was specifically for innovation, and, you know, this money would give us the opportunity to do things that we can't do in our normal operating budget cycle.
Right.
And so we were encouraging innovation and you know, a different way of reaching out to students that are most impacted.
So while we're talking about testing, and I have a kid in fifth grade and seventh grade, and so we deal with this a little bit as parents as well. This whole notion of teaching to tests and teaching to tests that I guess the curriculum requires be given, and I guess we could extend the conversation to standardized testing. You know, I hear repeatedly from teachers, either at teacher conferences or anecdotally or even through my kids that bring it home, teachers being frustrated by their inability to get to everything because they're so busy trying to get to the things that are going to be tested, and they're rushing through stuff. There are things that aren't always being taught at the level they need to be, and it all very often points back to all these requirements that are imposed upon them. Is that a fair statement?
Yes and no. Yes and no. Fair in the sense that, you know, we have a great curriculum. I mean, if you look at how well we're doing, the tests you're talking about, I'm assuming are the Maryland School Assessments.
The MSA.
Yes.
Yeah. Howard County, yeah, we're already at 90% pass rate.
And also unit tests. I mean, tests on a particular topic, like unit tests.
Okay. Well,
yes.
Teachers have that locus of control within their classroom. The curriculum is written such that if we're delivering the curriculum, the assessed items are covered through the normal course of curriculum. And clearly, they are, or our numbers won't look like they are. I mean, consistently, for the last, you know, since 2003, when this MSA showed up on our scene, Howard County has ranked first, second, and in some cases third on pass rates statewide for each one of the grade levels.
We're good at what we do.
We're good at what we do. We have good teachers. And so, you know, this some of this could be self-imposed anxiety. You know, others are, you know, it seems like the school year goes on forever. It's 180 days. But when you take in hurricane days and snow days and half days,
right.
Day before holiday, day after holiday, we're really shrinking the number of days teachers have to do what it is they do.
I would agree. My daughter is a freshman in high school. I feel like that.
So, you know, it's up to us to look at that and recognize that, you know, we're writing curriculum for 180 or 185 days. Maybe we should be writing curriculum for about 150 days. I mean, there's other ways to
right.
approach this, different lenses to look at, and that's what I'm challenging staff to do, is think differently about the work we're doing. Let's be more resourceful and more efficient.
You know, I often think of teachers sort of stuck between parents, and in Howard County, they really are stuck between parents and administration.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that same way sometimes, being stuck between what's imposed upon you from a federal perspective and delivering the education to the kids? Like, in other words, that you want more flexibility and being able to be more creative and deliver the teachings with more creativity, but you're stuck because of federal grants.
Race to the Top and
things like that.
No Child Left Behind.
Yes. Well, yes and no. Again, we got the, you know.
Are you an attorney?
No.
Yes, yes and no. Yes and no. I'm supposed to say that.
Okay. All right. To a degree, we are. We're in the human capital business. So, you know, 85 cents out of every $1 in education goes to human capital, the people in front of the classroom delivering
right.
it. You know, I would like to have more money so we can put more resources in place so
right.
the teachers had more to do with. More technology, one-to-one computing, you know, innovation all over the place so that, you know, we're not, you know, scrambling and piecemealing together, putting things together. And, you know, my biggest concern is that parents don't feel averages. They don't
right.
notice averages.
No.
But they feel variance. And yes. So what your children get at your school, the level right. of service, the technology, the textbooks, whatever it is, the school bus ride, if it's different from what you're getting,
yes.
okay, you're going to have a conversation, and then the variance is going to emerge.
Had the exact conversation yesterday. I was at a function with a it's an industry function, commercial real estate function, and another gentleman I was talking to is a Howard County resident. And he lives in the Elkridge area, and he was talking about how his kids had recently moved from one elementary school to another one because he moved his house. And he said night and day. And he was I'm not going to name the schools because that wouldn't be fair. But he said that, you know, the new school, he was so much more happy and was getting so much better results, and it was the administration. But that's the problem. I mean, it's not universal across the board, the delivery of the product. It can't be. We have 82 facilities. You've got 8,000 students.
Human capital.
Yeah, human capital.
We are in the people business. And so, yes. But there are standards that you should expect. And there should be some level of consistency from school to school. And I think to some degree there is. Again, it's when you bump into that variance that we know where...
That variance happens every day.
It does.
Several times a day, probably.
Well, and it's funny, going back to the redistricting, people say, oh, I don't want to leave this school because it's a better school than this one. You know what? They're all Howard County schools.
Right.
And if you don't get hung up on the variance between the best Howard County and the worst Howard County, and just look at the fact that these are all phenomenal schools, everyone's doing great.
And even, and you take it to another step, even though a school, my daughter went to Elgin Mills Middle School, and great mm-hmm. team there, mm-hmm. Blue Ribbon School, yep. Howard County. But, you know, if that principal got moved to another school, you know, that could all change in a year.
It could.
I mean, hopefully for the better, but it could also go the other way. I mean, so
sure.
You're always dealing with that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying, you know, again, across Roger Kaplan, who's a local political pundit we've had on occasion. I'm sure you've met Roger, or yes. Is Patty still with the school system?
Nope.
No.
Patty,
this
retired.
Rebecca Monty Dove is replaced.
Rebecca,
Patty.
Hi, Rebecca. We have a couple people guests today watching the show. But Roger used to say, our schools win the Super Bowl. What's the problem? And it's true. He says that to the critics of the. And he's right. I mean, you're going to have problems. It's just endemic in a system that big.
Well, with people, okay?
With people.
With 51,000
right.
kids and 8,000 employees, yes, there are going to be things that come up.
And with 82 facilities, there's a leaky roof out there somewhere today.
Count on it.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
The board, I think it was last night, formally apologized for segregation.
Mm-hmm.
First, my kudos to the board for doing that in the school system. But it begs the question, sort of as an outsider reading this story, what caused this?
What precipitated
it? Yeah, what precipitated it? Where did this come from? Was it something that the school system just decided it wanted to do? Was it approached by a group?
I believe
if you
Genesis,
know.
This was in a pipeline before I got here.
Sure.
But it's, you know, this is something that, you know, Board Member Dyer was passionate about and that he was pushing for. And, you know, he's, you know, very much into civil liberties and equalizing the playing field. He's passionate about closing our achievement gaps. And you know, his own experiences led him to much of what occurred last night. And, you know, I think, you know, the statement that the board wrote into their proclamation, profound regrets, says it all.
Right.
And I think it's huge to be the only school system in the country to have done such a thing, I'm told. But it's Board Member Dyer that initiated this.
No,
kudos to him.
Yeah, yeah.
Good,
yeah.
You might still come to like this guy before the day's out.
You know, it's like with all these guys, even with Brian Meshkin, I don't have any problem with these guys individually. But when they get into a position of making policy for our school system where 60% of my property tax revenue goes and my daughter is a customer of the system, then I got a problem when they start getting crazy.
So. Right. Actually, I have a question about, and this also predates you, so it may not be a fair question, the continuation of the removal of Alan Dyer, despite the fact that he lost the primary and now obviously is out in 2 months, but the continuation of these proceedings, what's the point of that other than a colossal waste of dollars and resources?
Or can't you not stop it?
Well, you know, this is...
You inherited this, so we
yeah,
prepared, right?
and you
can
know,
take, and you can take a pass on this if you'd like. It's no worries.
Yeah, because we understand that you walked into that situation. It's not something you were here when it started, so...
Well, I think on some level the point is moot. It was moot after the primary. You know, but I think for whatever reason the momentum continued. And you know, I'll be honest with you. My honest answer is I have not really unpacked that with board members to understand that. It really is something that started long before I got here. And you know, it hasn't impeded my ability to work with any of them.
Well, and your job coming in was to build rapport with your board members and develop a relationship going forward, not looking in the rearview mirror. Yeah. So that makes total sense.
Okay. Well, kind of getting towards the end here, but I wanted to, before we get too far, what's next? I mean, you're 6 months into the job. You've gotten through redistricting, and people still like you. I think. We're hearing good things.
Okay.
But sort of what's on the horizon? What are the kinds of things that you really want to undertake and as you look forward in the next, let's say, 1 to 3 years?
Well, I truly want to make it a world-class school system. And I think to do that, you know, we're not getting any more money. So what are we going to do? How are we going to maximize what it is we do currently have? How are we going to get better at doing what we're doing with what we already have? And everybody uses that phrase, doing more with less. I don't necessarily think it's doing more with less. I think it's doing, you know, more with different, or, you know, more as a system, more cross-functional work. I'm really interested in our budget process and some budget reform initiatives that I think we can undertake to kind of like scrape out some additional funds where I know we have inefficiencies and redundancies. So one of the things that I want to look at, we can't do it for this budget cycle because, you know, that's we're well underway with that, but as maybe a pilot, looking at some zero-based budgeting options and, you know, build a budget from, you know, the ground up. Other school systems have done that. It really maximizes efficiencies, and it creates a more transparent type of an organization. And I think we get a lot of criticisms in Howard County for not being transparent, and that's something that has to evolve. You don't just open the windows.
The Sunshine Foundation has given Howard County School System one of the highest awards.
For transparency.
Right. Yeah, but there's criticisms that, you know, we're not transparent enough.
How transparent do you have to be? See-through?
I guess. But I think it's less about transparency. I think it's more about having clearly articulated and defined processes and procedures in place. And, you know, how is it that we came to this decision?
So it's communication.
Yes. That's another piece. And so we did revamp our communications office. You know, we went from having just Patty and a couple other people to really looking at how we can strategically communicate messaging.
How do you, where's the intersection between rebuilding a budget and maintenance of effort, which is the requirement, obviously, that you spend just as much per pupil next year as you did this year? How do you do that?
Well, we're getting maintenance of effort. That's where we are. And so with that same dollar amount, you know, we're encroaching $800 million. We're, you know, just short of being a $1 billion business. And I heard you say that 60% of your taxes are coming to us. Okay, so you want results, and not just to be number one, number two in, you know, a ranking from the state.
No, I want my daughter to get a world-class education.
You do. Right. And you want her to have choices when she graduates.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay. You want her fully prepared.
Despite you being her dad.
Yeah. Well, she's got that handy. Right. She already got that going, working against her. I'm looking for the schools to take up the slack.
it's, you know, and again, we're the people business. We're 85 cents. We have to look at folks. I'm not saying cut positions. I'm not invested in doing that. But how is it that we can, you know, retool what we have to become more efficient? What are we doing? If what is your job? What are you producing? And how can we clearly show that what it is you're doing is translating itself into increased student achievement? You know, and that's everybody. I'm not just talking about teachers. I'm talking about, you know, everybody.
Right.
And if part of that is teachers, how do you deal with that? I think you threw out a number several shows ago about how few teachers actually lose their job. How do you manage that into that equation if that's part of the problem? And it may be only a very small piece, but how do you do that?
Well, we have an observation evaluation instrument that we use, and so it's a matter of, you know, setting expectations and, you know, teachers, you know, moving toward those differentiating expectations that schools are establishing.
And helping them achieve it.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Scaffolding. No one wants teachers to fail.
No.
To be unsuccessful.
No. We want everybody to be good in their job and to do it. But it happens. I mean, so.
Well, listen, thank you so much for coming by. Really appreciate
it.
Welcome aboard. Look
welcome
forward to continuing to work with you, and look forward to having you on again in the future.
Well, I hope I can come back soon.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Good luck with your second 6 months in the job.
Thank you.
Now that people are getting used to her, they might feel a little more comfortable taking her on, right?
No doubt. That about wraps up yet another episode of And Then There's That. Together with my co-host, Paul Scalney, we'd like to thank our producer, Dave Bittner, who makes us look good on the internet. We'd also like to thank General Growth Properties and the Mall in Columbia for hosting our show again today. We'll be back again on November 30th with special guest, Beta Dayhoff, the president of the Howard County Community Action Council, along with our usual blend of hyper-local news and commentary. We hope you'll join us. Have a happy Thanksgiving.